Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, May 6th, 2017. This is episode 1386. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan that's completely online at quickenloans.com/techguy. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TECHGUY to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. Well, hello there. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte is here. That's me, talking about myself in the third person, the Tech Guy, the show where we talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches, you know, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. I'd love to do it with you. 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. That's where you can go to... find everything we talk about, audio and video of the shows after the fact. And you can leave comments there if you want. And it's free and it's open and it's available to anybody at any time, 24/7. TechGuideLabs.com. So you don't have, I say that at the beginning of the show, just so you know, you don't have to write anything down. You don't have to take notes. There will be no quiz. And if there were, it would be an open book quiz because it's all at the website. James DeRuvo is writing this all down. In between marching band competitions, but other he loves those marching band competitions. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. What do we talk about? Everything that's technologically relevant. You know, for instance, the decision by the FCC and the actually it was a Congress, wasn't it? That voted down the FCC rule that would require internet service providers to ask you before they sold your information to the highest bidder. Seems fair that they should ask you. And I should say that at least while we're paying attention, all the internet service providers are saying, oh, we'll ask. We'll still ask. Oh, don't worry. We'll ask. But their history isn't very good in this regard. I think back to Verizon. If you had a Verizon phone, there was a couple of year period a few years back where every time you visited a website, a unique identifier was sent to the website and you couldn't turn it off. It was just part of the phone. And then Verizon would offer, hey, you want to know who this is? You want to connect this identifier with a person? We don't know how much information. They might have even said, and we'll tell you where they live and how old they are and how much money they have and all sorts of stuff that your internet service provider can glean from your use of the internet. FCC found out about this, fined them a pittance, admittedly. I think it was like under $2 million, which for Verizon is, you know, pocket change, cigarette money. But they told them, knock it off, and Verizon knocked it off. Well, that won't happen anymore. That won't happen anymore. And you can expect all the internet service providers, as soon as we're not paying attention to, it's good money. You know what? They're for-profit businesses. You can't really knock them for trying to make money. If Congress says it's okay, they should do it. Anything that's legal. Well, maybe there's some moral and ethical considerations or even customer, you know, appreciation considerations. But Congress says it's okay. So really where you got to go is Congress and say, why'd you do that? What were you thinking? If you ask a member of Congress, Daryl Issa, for instance, he'll say, well, it's to level the playing field. See, Google and Facebook can spy on you, so your ISP should be able to spy on you, too. A couple of things wrong with that logic. One, you don't have to use Google and Facebook. Two, they don't know as much about you as your ISP does, your internet service provider. And three, how about instead of lowering the bar, let's raise the bar. I wouldn't mind if they went to Google and Facebook and said, hey, and you have to ask permission, too. That would be okay. There's a fourth point to be made, which is that you pay the ISP. They make money by charging you. Google and Facebook make money by advertising to you. So there's different business models as well. In any event, I love it because the city of Seattle has decided, well, if Congress won't do it, we will. Now, I don't know if this will get challenged in courts, you know. The Republican Congress believes in states' rights until the states actually do something they don't like, and then, well, that's another matter. Seattle says that there's apparently the municipal code governs cable franchises. I think that's true in every market. That's how cable works. And the rules in the books allow them to set privacy standards for subscribers purchased over the cable system. So they added a rule saying, hey, if you're a cable internet service provider, you have to get consent from your customer before you can use their internet usage data for your own purposes. Wow, what a thought. Now, unfortunately, it doesn't apply to the wireless carriers or the phone companies, but it does apply at least to the cable company. Why shouldn't we do that? Don't you think that's a good idea? Seattle does it, and maybe more cities should do it. Maybe more states should do it. And maybe our Congress critters should do it. Not an unreasonable thing to ask. Just, you know, ask us first before you sell our stuff up the river, huh? Please? Is that so much? Is that too much to ask? Now, for those of you who want to sell your privacy up the river, Amazon's busy. And actually, I can't wait to get one of these. First of all, last week they announced the Look, which is a new Amazon Echo. You know the Echo? We talk about the Echo a lot. I love the Echo. I have Echoes in every room. It has a microphone and listens to you. And if you say the trigger word, and it can be a variety of words, computer or Echo or a word I won't say because the default is a feminine, A-L-E-X-A. And if you say that, I will trigger your Echo. And then you can ask things. You can buy things. I buy things all the time. It's actually very handy. It's one of the reasons I have. And you can listen to music and books and stuff. So they haven't sold it yet, but they've asked people to ask. You have to ask for an invitation if you want to buy this. Something called the Look, which has a camera and a flash built into it, does everything else that the Amazon Echo does, but it will also, if you say, hey, Echo, take a picture, it'll take a picture of you, or take a video of you, and then you can have it sent off to Amazon where machine intelligence and human stylists will review your look and make recommendations. I can't wait. Amazon's also said a completely separate story, or is it, that they might be making tailored clothing for people. So now you got a camera. Those cameras, if you move around a little bit, can get your exact measurements. You could say, hey, Amazon, I need a jacket. Snap my picture and send it to me. And it'd be perfectly tailored. Wow. And we expect in the next couple of months a new Amazon Echo. It's leaked out. AFTV News exclusively, in an exclusive, got a picture of it somewhere in the Amazon code. It's got a little screen on it. Codename Night. They expect it'll be released later this month. A touchscreen, 7 inches on it. You know, if you have an Echo, you can use your Amazon Fire tablet to see what's playing now, to see if the Echo's done the right thing, to change settings. There's an app for it. You could do that on your phone, too, actually. I don't think this is a bad idea. But put a camera in that one, too, please. There is, above the screen, a little circle that looks like it could be a camera. Now, see, you might say, but Leo, you were just talking about privacy. You already have a microphone in your home, and now you want to put a camera on it? But yes, but don't you? You know that thing in your pocket you call your smartphone that has a GPS, a camera, location sensors, a barometer, a microphone, and is always connected to the internet? That thing? Yeah, you got that. So, it's just, you know, my point is I want to be able to choose. And if I find there's value in giving up a little privacy, and I can read the privacy policy and agree to it, I think that's fine. But you can't not use an internet service provider, right? Most of us don't have that choice. 8888-ASK-LEO. And you don't have to get an Echo, so you have that choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to the phones. Take your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. Heather Hammond is here. Hammond. She's answering the phones for us. Hello, HH.
Hey, Mr. Laporte.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
Do you like the Archie's Sugar Sugar?
Sure.
They call that bubblegum music.
Oh, I love it. Pop rock.
Pop rocks. Yeah. Remember Pop Rocks? Speaking of Pop Rock.
Dear friends of mine.
What?
Oh, you mean the candy.
Oh, there's a band too. Called Pop Rocks? Of course there is. Of course there is. So you have been answering the phone since early this morning. Like a baker, you come in at 3 in the morning and you prepare the buns. You dust them lightly with flour. Who should I talk about?
And I'm serving up a tray of only the best.
Uh-huh.
So Dennis in Marina Del Rey is a photographer. Uh-huh. And you know how you have all that stuff in your hands when you're a photographer?
He needs
some help.
Mm. I know that feeling. Thank you, Heather. Hello, Dennis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome to the show.
Leo, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it. And anytime, I would encourage any of your people, when they use a product, tell the sponsors that they heard it on your show. And I do the same thing. Got a problem. I'm a 72-year-old retired military vet who's done professional photography for about 50 years. And right now, I don't really have business cards because I do it by referral, but I do a lot of pro bono work to help out, aspiring actors and actresses.
Nice.
And people that kind of need it. I've had a good life. And I will actually teach, I love to teach young kids to get them inspired to do photography as well.
Sure.
So, and I can refer people to my website and say, here, this is how to contact me. But, when you're out at a social function where people don't know each other, what I'd like to do is use my tablet. I've got a Verizon tablet, the Android tablet, I think it was called Ellipse. And I'd like for them to be able to go in there and just write their name and phone number in there very quickly.
What a great idea.
And I found the keyboards, and the keyboards are large, I can find that, but it seems like any of the forms that I found, that the typing is so doggone small you can't read it. So I'm looking for something that just name and phone number that would take up the whole screen.
I'll tell you what, a friend of mine who is a professional photographer, very talented, named Catherine Hall, did. She wanted something similar, and she created an app called Top Model Release.
Okay.
It's iOS app. And she went to an attorney and created a variety of model release forms, which can be used, of course, to gather contact information, but also to kind of indemnify you, let people know you're going to be taking their picture.
Basically all I need, most of the time I don't want to post. I could post all the pictures and say, go back and choose your picture, but a lot of them don't want their picture displayed. So I'm just looking for something that I get in contact with them and say, hey, let me send your picture to you. Or, maybe that they want information about how to get me to teach them free of charge.
Nice.
Photography. So,
well, unless you carry a printer around with you, you probably need a business card for that purpose.
And sometimes, with social functions, business cards get lost and all that. And so,
I would take a look at this Top Model Release for sure. There are programs that are merely Scooter says that Catherine's no longer offering Top Model Release. I hope that's not true, but see if it's there. If it isn't, and you go into the App Store, there will be other suggestions for similar programs. And of course, there are programs that let you take contact information. Another one I was going to tell you about that has also been discontinued. You may have heard of Evernote. You ever use Evernote?
Yes, I have.
Love Evernote. They had a contacts app that was exactly this. You would hand it to somebody, and they would be, prompted to fill it all out. It was really cool. But that was also discontinued. I don't know what's wrong with these people. There's no reason not to keep this stuff in the App Store. But let's see if there are going to be some other similar programs.
May I ask you just one other quick application? A lot of times, you know, I'll be looking through a magazine like the AAA Westways magazine, and they'll have events in there, and I'd like to remember them. So I take a photograph of it.
Love doing that. I do that all the time.
And what I would like is some sort of a calendar where you could have an attachment for that date rather than having to physically take the information, the time and date of the thing, and put in your calendar. I'd like for, you know, you'd be able to put in your calendar and say Strawberry Festival, and for it to have an attachment that you could open up and see all the particulars.
You know, do you use Google Photos?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So what I do is I take a picture. For instance, we go to a restaurant. They always have the menus on specials on a menu at the front of the restaurant, and then you go in the back. So I always snap a picture as I'm going by. But that's, of course, because it's Google Photos, you know, we'll automatically copy that. It'll organize it by date. And at that point, you can certainly share it to a calendar. So the share sheet in Google Photos will allow you to add it to your the picture to your calendar. And when it opens that up, then you can write Strawberry Festival. Somebody's telling me that there are a number of model release apps now in the App Store. Maybe that's why Catherine stopped selling hers. The chat room says there are several, so we'll put links in the show notes to those.
Yeah, I actually have an attorney that drifted up. One other quick question. I love Johnny Jet, and just a question to ask him is, what would happen if the airlines didn't over... In other words, they sold a seat to everybody, and if you showed up, you showed up. If you didn't, you didn't. And, you know, the nice thing about it is if people didn't show up, they still spend the money. It's a non-revocable ticket. And if they didn't show up, the airplane's lighter is spending less money on fuel.
Yeah, why? You know, why are they bumping people? Because you know what? There are people who insist on refundable tickets, or there are just no-shows. I will ask Johnny that. Why don't they do that? That's an interesting question.
Thanks for your wonderful show.
Hey, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. And good luck with your – you want to give out your website?
Yeah, I can give it out. It's www.wdc.photography.
Oh, nice name. wdc.photography. I like it.
Right. And I love to inspire people. And if anybody needs some help or wants to be inspired, I'd love to help out. It's just kind of my gift back to inspire people to do things.
It's you know, both the best of times and the worst of times for photographers. Best of times because there's so many ways to get your photography out there, to reach out to people. There's so many great ways to learn. Cameras are better than ever. Digital photography is revolutionized things. It's also the worst of times because if you're trying to make a living at it, there's 800 million amateurs who are doing it for free. It's hard.
Right. Fortunately, I don't have to worry about that.
That's nice.
So many people will pick up a camera and say, I'm a photographer. And I say, if I pick up an apron, am I a chef?
Yeah.
So it doesn't work that way.
Oh, golly, no. you know, I'd be a better writer if I just had a better typewriter.
But, you know, the people that pick up a camera and do it, the more they do it, the better they're going to get at it. So if you can just get them started, you know, it's like exercise maybe, and they'll continue with it and get inspired. So, but you're right, it is difficult out there because everybody and their brother has a camera. And so
now, I think I've figured out your secret plot, Dennis, because you seem to love taking pictures of beautiful women. I understand now. I'm looking at the glamour section, but there's also kids and food and celebrities and animals.
Yeah, look at the food. I have tried most of the food and have become gravitational.
Oh, look at that Brussels sprouts. That's the best picture I ever saw of Brussels sprouts. This is nice stuff. I love it. What a great hobby, huh?
Thank you. If it inspires you, and I know you're a photographer, and if it inspires somebody, that's the purpose.
Thank you, Dennis. Have a great one.
Thank you. God bless.
Take care. Yeah. I just happened to come up on the ladies. Guy's good. You know what? The guy's good. Yeah, for me, it's just an excuse to travel. Very nice. And he's a Leica guy. I like that, too. I like that, too. Good story. Really great story. That's neat. What a nice guy. All right. I see he's coming in. Scott Wilkinson.
Leo Laporte.
How you doing, Scotty?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Good.
Glad to hear
it. Good. So, what was I going to ask you? I don't know. People want to know if you saw the Guardian of the Galaxy.
I did, and I would be happy to talk about it. There's some tech to talk about there.
Okay, good. That's what we'll do then. OJ, I had the Sony A9 in my cart. I had it pre-ordered at almost $5,000.
Which one? What's that?
This
now?
Is the new Sony A9 camera. Oh man, I want it so badly, but I really can't justify that. So much money. So much money.
And that's not even with a lens or a good lens.
Well,
right?
I have plenty of lenses for it because I'm a Sony guy. But
you're a Sony guy. Okay.
Yeah, I just can't.
How much is the body?
$4,500.
Holy smokes.
So, you know, I bought instead for almost the same price a Peloton bicycle. I thought I'll get more mileage
well,
out of that.
Better for your health, yeah.
Yeah. I've got plenty of good cameras. I don't need to get any good cameras. Right. Any more good cameras. Although it's a very tempting camera.
It sounds like it to me.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're doing some very interesting things with it. I'll wait a little bit.
It'll come down.
No, it won't. Maybe it will a little bit. It'll come down when the A10 comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, where is my Toots the Unicorn? Good question, Guy Smiley. My Vizio M Series did come with its tablet remote. Yep, I'm very excited. That's Lisa's.
Yeah, it does come with a yeah. Still comes with a tablet.
Yeah, the Android tablet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
didn't they change it though so that the apps are now back in the TV rather than in the tablet?
Yeah. It does that Google that Cast. Change. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't to set it up yet, so I don't know. But I noticed that the TV has a bunch of. In fact, it's one of the reasons I got it for. It's got a good. She has cable in that room, so I guess we'll put a cable box on it, but you wouldn't need to.
No, you wouldn't really need to.
Yeah.
And Hulu just announced their beta of live TV streaming.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's a number of these.
There's a number of them now,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And in San Francisco Bay Area, they're also doing local stations.
Yes.
As well as LA, as is New YouTube, York, and a couple.
Yeah, YouTube TV, which is what I have right now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Lisa and I were talking about cord cutting this summer.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind. I really wouldn't mind.
You know, there are certain channels that you don't get. On Hulu, I just wrote about it. On Hulu, I think you don't get the Discovery Channel. You don't BBC America. You don't get a few things.
Oh, maybe I didn't get. They're saying they don't come with a tablet remote. In the new, I thought I got the 2017. Well, I'll know if I have a tablet.
If you, yeah, maybe so. I had thought they gave up the tablet at least
they
on
did.
The M series.
They did, apparently.
So maybe you got one of the 2016s,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
is fine. They announced the 2017s, but it didn't look to me like there were that many, you know, big changes.
Right. I'm not sure what I got. I thought I got the 2017, but I'll look. I do want to mention our sponsor for the show today, Rocket Mortgage. You've heard me talk about them before. Are you going out to the open houses this weekend? Might you see something you would like to buy? You know you'll have to get a home loan, right? Or maybe you have a house and you want to refi it while the interest rates are still low. This would be a good time to do it. Can I please recommend Rocket Mortgage? It comes from the best mortgage lender in the country, Quicken Loans. I mean, absolutely the best. Not just number one. J.D. Power customer satisfaction, number one since 2010, but also number one in mortgage servicing. So for mortgage origination and for mortgage servicing, they're just great. And because they know there are some people who just want to do it all online, just get it done fast, they've created this thing called Rocket Mortgage. You'll find it at quickenloans.com/techguy. Do it all on your phone. Literally, apply for a loan on your phone or your tablet or your computer. You could do it at an open house, submit all the paperwork electronically, whether it's bank statements or pay stubs, with a touch of a button. They have a slider. You can adjust the rate and the term of your loan, get it just right, press go, and get approved, not in days or weeks, or in my case, it took us more than a month last time we bought a house. I wasn't using Rocket Mortgage, obviously. Rocket Mortgage will do it in minutes. In minutes, a fully online loan approval process from the best lender in the country. It's a no-brainer. For a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online, visit quickenloans.com/techguy. quickenloans.com/techguy. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS. ConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Don't forget, quickenloans.com/techguy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. And look, my goodness, who's here? Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek. He's our home theater guru. His podcast, twit.tv/HTG. He also writes for the AVS Forum. He's editor-in-chief over there. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo.
Did you go to the movies?
I did. I was just dancing just now, just like Baby Groot.
Groot. Is Baby Groot in the new one? Wait a minute. No spoilers.
Oh, no, I'm not going to give you any spoilers.
Okay.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I have to say, I really enjoyed it.
Now, did you like the first one?
I did. You know, it's so funny because when it first came out, which was 2014 already. Wait, can you believe it's been that long?
Wow.
I didn't jump to see it. I thought a wisecracking raccoon and a talking tree. Come on.
It was really good. I liked
it. But then Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was being released in Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos. And so I said, okay, I got to go see that. And I better look at the first one. I better watch the first one before I go. And boy, am I glad I did. Man, there's a lot of plot points in the second one that derive from the first one. So if you're going to go see it, and I do recommend it, it's really funny. It's just funny. See the first one first. It's important. Otherwise, you'll be a little confused,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
So I won't give you any spoilers, but I will say there are some interesting technical aspects to this. First of all, it is in, like I said, Dolby Vision, high dynamic range, Dolby Atmos, immersive sound in Dolby Cinema theaters, of which there are, I think, 60 around the U.S. now. And wow, does it look good. I mean, it really looks fantastic. The colors are just amazing.
What are they using? Is it DLP or?
Yeah, the projector system is DLP, digital light processing. And in fact, they have two projectors, and the light source is our red, green, and blue lasers.
Lasers.
Yes.
So this is probably the best projection system out right now.
I believe it is. In my opinion, it certainly is. Now, it's in 2D. If you go to IMAX or other theaters, you'll see it in 3D. And there were some shots. There are some shots in this movie that are clearly intended for 3D. Mm-hmm. You know, a spaceship flying right at you, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But the Dolby Vision high dynamic range is so good. And with that deep, deep black and bright whites, it takes on a dimensionality that I don't miss 3D at all.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you wouldn't either.
No, I'm not a fan because it's dimmer and you have to wear those silly glasses.
Exactly.
I just find it a little uncomfortable. And I think good 2D can be very immersive. I like the idea that HDR might really make it more immersive.
Oh, seriously more immersive.
In a way that doesn't distract. 3D so often distracts.
Exactly.
Good.
So.
Good.
Now, interestingly, they shot this movie on digital cameras. It was not on film. It was with this company called Red.
Yeah.
And they shot it at 8K. 8K resolution. That's not what they presented it at, but they captured it at 8K. And according to IMDb, which is this website that has all the, you know, virtually every movie ever made with all the technical specs and everything, they say that an element of the process called the digital intermediate or DI was in 4K. And so I'm suspecting that the final file that they delivered to the theater to play mm-hmm. was in 4K.
Hmm. That's good enough. I mean, you're not sitting right up in front of the screen. You don't.
Good enough. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it just looked phenomenal. And the Dolby Atmos sound, I'm sure it's no spoiler to say that popular music from the 80s plays an important part in both of these movies.
Yes.
You know, the awesome mixtape. And all of those great songs that we remember from the 80s are mixed way out into the room on the surrounds and the overheads. It just surrounds you with these songs that those of us of a certain age are very familiar with. So that's really good. And the high dynamic range is great. There was one problem I must mention at my local Dolby Cinema. I couldn't believe it. Once the movie started, I noticed there was some light spill on the screen.
What? No, that means there's like a little halo around the edge.
Well, yeah, or even on the screen itself. It turns out I looked back towards the projection booth. Someone had left the overhead light on in the projection booth.
Did you go knock on the door?
No, I didn't. Because...
Come on. You go pound on the door and you say, you know who I am? Hey, I am Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek, and you better turn your light off in there.
Well, you realize, of course, that there are virtually no projectionists anymore. There was nobody up there. You know, this is all automatic these days.
Well, there's got to be some. Go ask the popcorn person to turn it off then.
Well, I wanted to, for sure. But I had already started my level measurement. You know, when I go to the movies, I take my sound pressure level meter, my SPL meter.
Yeah.
And I measure the sound. And by the way.
Such a geek.
I'm so geeky, I know. I'm yeah. such a geek.
And was it loud?
It was really loud. In fact, it was over 7 dB louder than reference level.
Oh, so the theater was blowing it.
The theater was blowing it in two ways. And I made a complaint about it, and I was unable to see the manager about it because they were busy with something else, I guess.
Just what they want. Some guy, excuse me, but you know, you're 7 dB over reference level. I think you really ought to consider turning it down a little bit.
That's right.
Well, they know it's teenagers want it loud, you know.
Yeah, and it was loud. It was really loud.
Is it dangerously loud? I mean, is that bad for your, I guess it would be, right?
Yeah, it can. I think it is. You know, yeah. It's 2 hours of exposure. And OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, specifies that you don't want to be over 80 or 85 dB for 8 hours, okay. Which I think is too loud. I think that rule is unreasonable.
So you might, if you're going with kids or you want to protect your own hearing, you might want to wear some earplugs.
I sure would.
This actually is a good question. Are there earplugs that don't just
yes,
but actually preserve the sonic quality and just reduce the level?
Yep, there are, but they aren't cheap. Basically, you have to get custom molded earplugs.
Oh, forget about it. Okay.
And that's pretty expensive.
That's a lot. I have those, of course, for professional reasons, but they're
right,
expensive.
Right, exactly. I do too, but yeah. They're very expensive.
You have to go to
but
an audiologist.
They're often called musician's earplugs, and a yeah. lot of symphony players wear them.
Yeah,
because they do exactly as you say. They reduce the level without changing the spectral profile very much. It's a little bit changed still because bass low frequencies come in not only through the ear but through the body as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you do tend to hear a little more bass when you've got these earplugs in relative to the mids and highs. But if you're a symphony player and you're, you know, particularly, say, in the woodwinds and you're right behind the trumpets or right in front of the trumpets, you really want to protect your hearing.
Well, I want to see this movie, but I don't want to hurt my hearing. So
take earplugs. But for you, there is now a Dolby Cinema in San Francisco.
Oh, good.
At the Metreon, and
yes.
I highly recommend seeing it there.
The Metreon's always been kind of a forerunner of the high-tech yeah. stuff. They have
and
an
Dolby
IMAX
is,
there as well.
They do, and that yeah. it'll probably be in 3D there, but I would go see it at Dolby Cinema. Dolby, as a company, is based in San Francisco,
right.
And I'm really surprised they didn't have
a
Dolby Cinema there before. Yeah, exactly.
Scott Wilkinson, you'll find his work at the AVS Forums. AVS Forum.
Including my review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
AVSForums.com. And you'll also find his podcast. What day do you do that? For Thursday?
Thursdays. 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific.
On twit.tv/HTG. And you can even watch it live if you want on Thursday afternoons. That's my podcast network. Disclaimer. I'm plugging myself and Scott. Thank you, Scott. We'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I can't wait to see this. Maybe we should do this tonight.
Oh,
it'll be crowded.
You've seen Dolby Cinema's reserved seating.
No, I know they've, our Boulevard has put in trays and recliners. They have Atmos now.
Yeah, and they also are promoting a thing called Giant Screen.
They have Giant Screen?
Ask God if he knows anything about Giant
What is
screen.
Giant Screen?
Giant Screen?
Our local theater is crazy. It's kind of funny because they're really trying to, you know, make this work.
But I bet you your local theater doesn't have high dynamic range.
Well, they have Giant Screen.
They have Giant Screen, but it's the blacks are going to be gray.
They have Atmos. They all were wearing Atmos t-shirts.
Atmos is fantastic.
GS, Giant Screen. Disney Digital 3D, now featuring Twin, Giant Screen, Dolby Atmos. auditoriums with luxury electric recliners, beers and wines, D-box seats and trays in front of you.
I know. Dolby Cinema has D-box seats, too, and I don't like those.
But what about giant screens?
Is giant screen?
I don't know what giant
trademark thing.
I don't know what that is. What's the the theater chain? Is it a chain or is it an independent?
It's a chain. It's a Cinema West. It's a local chain.
Oh, okay. I don't know Cinema West.
Yeah, they're probably, up here. Huh. Well, I'll check it out. All right, Scott, do you want to stay for the top of the hour as well?
I am happy to.
All right, let me set you up. You don't have a whole lot of time here, but we'll...
Well, that's fine.
We'll jam
I'll stay for the top.
Jam you in there. All right.
So anyway, yeah, if you do live near a Dolby Cinema, I do recommend that. And Squirrel Boy posted the list of Dolby Cinemas at the Dolby website. You can also find that list on AVS Forum. I maintain that list on AVS Forum so that our members and people who visit our site can find if there's a theater near them. You know, there's 50 or 60 now, and so the number is growing all the time. They hope to get to over 100 by the end of the year. But that's still, there's an awful lot of people in the U.S. that aren't near one. So that's unfortunate. But if you can, see it there. It just looks amazing. In fact, I didn't say this on the air, but the colors are so vivid, so vibrant. I don't know this for a fact, but I wonder if that movie was mastered to a color standard called BT2020, which is a wider palette of colors than most movies are made to. Most movies are made with a color palette called P3. And that color palette is wider than what most people have at home, but it's still not as wide as 2020. And the only way to get 2020 is with a laser, an RGB laser projector, which Dolby Cinema is. So are IMAX laser projectors. And there are now quite a few IMAX theaters with laser projectors. And they also use RGB, and they have a higher dynamic range as well as a potential for a wider color gamut. But it's not quite as high a dynamic range as Dolby Cinema. Dolby Cinema still holds the record for that, or the title for highest dynamic range. So if you can, definitely see it there. You know what? I'm going to have to probably defer some of this till the top of the hour. So I hope you guys stick around. UJ, what budget earplugs would you recommend for movie theater viewing? Budget earplugs? I'll have to do. I seem to remember something about that. I'll have to look into that. Let me see if I can answer that.
That would be a good topic, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
I agree.
Thank you, Scott. We'll talk in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and I'm told by our chat room, Beatmaster in our chat room, that Galaxies of the Guardians, Guardians of the Galaxy, as is kind of the way they've been doing it lately, these comic book movies. You don't leave. They get you to watch the credits because they have, he says, several end credit scenes, not just one. Oh, Lord. I was at a movie. I can't remember what it was. Probably Deadpool or something, and we got up to leave at the end of the movie, right? As one is wont to do, and a woman in the front row said, "Don't leave. sit back down. It's not over." 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Mike in Murrieta, California is next. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm a real estate appraiser, and about 2 months ago, I have this one website that I rely on almost daily for verifying zoning information, maps, environmental issues, and building permits and things. About 2 months ago, it just stopped working. I got a notification to install Microsoft Silverlight.
Oh, lordy. So, it's a government website?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, what a shame.
Yeah. And I've just been pulling my hair out trying to figure things out. And, I can get all the information over the phone. It's just, it's so time consuming. But the workaround that I just figured out is I have one of my son's old laptops that has, like, Windows 8.1.
Yeah, trash his laptop.
Yeah, so
it still has Silver. So Microsoft Silverlight was like Flash, was a plug-in for your browser that allowed you to view videos and animation. And Microsoft's deprecated it. They don't do it anymore. Netflix used to be in Silverlight, but almost everybody's moved away from things like Flash and Silverlight to just what we call HTML5, which is doesn't require a plugin. It's just supported by the browsers, and it's much more secure and safer. Mm-hmm. Plugins are kind of inherently dangerous and can do a lot to slow things down, and it's just not a good idea. And I'm actually very glad that Microsoft deprecated Silverlight. However, it's not unusual. Government websites, any website designed and developed by old school developers, shall we say, people who aren't keeping up with the technology, there's always the risk. You know, they know Silverlight, right? So they're going to just keep using it. Mm-hmm. It bugs me because I don't think a government website should ever require the use of a proprietary service, plugin, or software. It bugs me when they offer files in the Microsoft Word format. Sure, I can read those in other formats, but you shouldn't be doing that. You should not make any assumption about the computing capabilities of your users, ever, especially if you're the government. So I understand, the MLS might, a realty service might, that, it's not unusual. So Is it state or local government? It's probably local, right? County.
Yeah, it's county. And, yeah. The weird thing is that I kind of noticed the correlation. It was after I had one of those automatic Windows updates done on my computer. It just stopped working like
yes, because the Windows update removed Silverlight because Microsoft has turned it off.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is the county, they don't have any money. Who knows? The website is probably years old. They should fix it, but they're not gonna. So what you're doing is using an older version of Windows that still supports Silverlight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what you do if you're using Windows 10. Microsoft does have a Silverlight. Let's see what they say on the Silverlight site. You can go to Microsoft.com/getSilverlight, and I guess you can install it. Let's see what the system requirements are. It doesn't mention Windows 10. Microsoft Consumer, get this, Microsoft Consumer support for Silverlight ended July 13th, 2010, almost 7 years ago. Almost 7 years ago. And so that tells you how long it's been since the county has updated the website. It's also a good argument if you're listening and you work for a company to not use non-standard technologies like Silverlight or Flash, because then you're going to be – the burden is going to be on you to – it's hard because the web changes, but the more vanilla you can make your website, the better. I think your solution is not a bad solution. I don't know I don't know what you can do. They are still supporting it. Chrome doesn't support it. Firefox stopped supporting it in March. Microsoft Edge doesn't support it. If you could find an older browser, and Microsoft doesn't even say Windows 10 support on their website. So,
well, that's my other question is I did have my wife try to access it from her work, and she uses a little bit older version of Internet Explorer, and she was able to
access it. That would work, yeah.
Is there a way that I can roll back my version of Internet Explorer so that it might work? I use Windows 10, but I'd like to see if I can roll back to it.
So you've tried going to Microsoft.com/getSilverlight in Internet Explorer on Windows 10. Have you tried that yet? And it did. You weren't able to install it.
No.
Yeah, there are ways to install old versions of Internet Explorer. Let me just look. I haven't done this in a while. How do I downgrade Internet Explorer? You can, yeah, it looks like you can install older versions on modern versions of Windows. The way you're going to do it, I understand now, is using a virtual machine. And this is actually the long-term solution for you, which is, in other words, you're going to run old stuff inside of the new stuff in a virtual machine. Microsoft allows you to do this. I'll put a link in the show notes to the Microsoft page that actually explains how you can... It's called the Internet Explorer Application Compatibility VPC Image. Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
If you Google that, you can download Internet. And this is actually for web developers who want to check compatibility with older versions of IE.
Okay.
So you could put that. It's free. You could put that on your Windows 10 machine, and then you can have different versions of Internet Explorer. It's
interesting.
Again, if you Google Internet Explorer Application Compatibility VPC Image.
Okay.
And I'm going to presume that it'll work on Windows 10, although they don't say it will. But Microsoft's famous for not, you know, I don't know. Try it. But that's a good way to do it, because then you can preserve compatibility without running risky software, without having to use your son's laptop. I think that's a great way to do it.
Okay. All right. We'll give it a shot. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You.
Yeah. And I can't really fault the county, because, you know, they don't have a lot of money, I'm sure. And, you know, they're probably getting a lot of calls, though, especially after March when Internet Explorer stopped supporting it and Firefox stopped supporting it. That was pretty much the drop dead date. And I bet you they've been getting calls ever since. They'll have to fix it. They just, you know, it's expensive. Older versions of Firefox will also work. Guy Smiley's telling me in the chat room, and we'll put a link to a place where you can download a portable version of Firefox. Unlike Internet Explorer, which has its hooks deep in the operating system, Firefox can run just as an app, a standalone app. So you can have multiple versions of Firefox on your computer. Doesn't require a virtual machine. And when you want to run Silverlight, just use one of the older compatible versions of Firefox. That's a good way to do that, too. We'll put links to all that stuff.
I don't know that one.
You don't? I gotta mute my Echo. She tries to chime in all the time. We'll put this all at our website. Our show notes page is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Good resource for that kind of thing. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. We just talked to Mike. So next is, and thank you for hanging on, Annie in Las Vegas. She can't see the files on her drive. The drive looks okay. It's just blank. Don't do anything, Annie. Don't do anything on that computer. We'll talk to you after the break, and I can help you figure out where your stuff is. It's still there. The card catalog is damaged. And we're getting a lot. Thank you, chat room. Mike B's just giving me a great link for Firefox. There's some great stuff, and we're going to put it all at the website, techguylabs.com. It was a big deal when Microsoft dropped Silverlight. Everybody went, what? That's going to cause problems. That's going to sting. And it is, 7 years later. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All righty, Scotty. I'm going to give you your full complement of seconds this time. No more cutting into your time.
I appreciate that. Wow, Scooter X says the closest Dolby Cinema is an AMC Dine-In. I never understood this. Why would you want to have a waiter coming and bringing your food and your drink and taking stuff away during the movie? It'd be very distracting. I'm not into that at all. UJ had asked, what budget earplugs do you recommend? And I went and did a little research. And the two that I do recommend, one is from a company called Heroes, H-E-A-R-O-S, and they make some hi-fi earplugs. The other company is Etymotic, E-T-Y-M-O-I-C, and they make high-fidelity earplugs too. And the characteristic of both of those is They actually consist of three nested hemispheres, basically, that are one in top of the other, and you stick them in your ears. They do have a better fidelity than the cheap, you know, Dayglo orange foam ones. So those are what I recommend about that. Let's see. Squirrel Boy is asking, what do I need to do to request my local theater to get a Dolby Atmos set up? Go to the manager and ask them, but it's not going to do you any good. It's expensive. They got to mount a bunch of speakers on the ceiling. They got to buy a bunch of speakers, mount them on the ceiling, get the decoding hardware. So it ain't cheap. And unless Dolby is subsidizing them, which they probably did in the beginning, but I don't know if they still are. I doubt it. Then it's going to be expensive. I mean, if you get a letter writing campaign going, who knows? Maybe if they think that there's enough demand for it, they'll spend the money, but then they'll also charge more for the tickets, which in my opinion is worth it. But it is going to be more expensive. BKK Canuck is asking, what's the best sound reduction options for molded earplugs that I would recommend? Well, first of all, you have to go to an audiologist, right? So you go to an audiologist and they're going to take molds of your ears, of your specific ears. And the way they do it is a little uncomfortable, a little squeamy. They squirt this goo into your ear and you sit there and you wait for it to harden. And when it hardens, they pull it out and then they have a perfect mold of your particular ears. They send that off to a company that makes custom earplugs. The company makes them, sends them back to the audiologist. You go back to the audiologist and you pick them up and pay for them. They're typically going to be on the order of, I think, a couple $100. They also include, such earplugs also include filters, interchangeable filters, little tiny little round things that go into these earplugs. And you can choose a filter that cuts, that attenuates by a certain amount. I think the levels are typically 9, 15, and 25 dB. I have the 25 dB ones. Now, for the companies that make these molded earplugs from the mold that your audiologist takes, my favorite is a company called Sensaphonics. They use a particular type of silicone material that I've had for at least 25 years, maybe 30 years, and they still are perfectly fine. They haven't degraded at all. Other companies that make them, and I'm sure do a good job as well, are Edemotic, again, which I mentioned earlier, and Westone is another company that makes them. So those are what I recommend. That's the absolute best hearing protection you can get, but it ain't cheap. So, you know, depends on what you need. Let's see. Zorro's asking about the link to Dolby Theaters on AVS Forum. It's in my Guardian of the Galaxy's review, but I'll stick a link in the chat room as well. Squirrel Boy's asking, what's the difference between Dolby Surround 7.1 and Dolby Atmos? Good question. 7.1 basically has seven channels surrounding you in a horizontal plane, more or less. So you have three in front. You have two to the sides and two to the rear. But that's all in a horizontal plane. Atmos adds speakers overhead on the ceiling, which gives you what's called three-dimensional or 3D immersive audio. And if a soundtrack or any kind of sound has been mixed in Dolby Atmos, then it's tremendously more immersive than 7.1. Another difference between them is that 7.1 is what's called channel-based. So when the mixer is deciding where each sound is going to be in the 7.1 sound field, they basically pan between channels. Atmos, by contrast, is what's called object-based. And so they take individual sound-emitting objects like a plane or a person or a bird or even rain, which is a very large object, and they can pan that to wherever it needs to be in the 3D sound space, regardless of, they don't even have to think about channels or where the speakers are. They're just saying, I want it to come from there. And the Atmos decoder will then say, okay, what speakers do I have? How can I best reproduce the sound so that it's coming from there? So the sound mixer is thinking about where sounds come from rather than what channels they need to be in. So that's another difference between them. But the biggest difference is that you've got speakers overhead and you've got a three-dimensional hemispherical sound field as opposed to a two-dimensional planar sound field, if you will. Let's see here. Oh, Web 1057, I just got a second subwoofer. Does the source material need to be 7.2 to hear the second sub? No, absolutely not. Good question. There's only one, well, with a minor exceptions, virtually all content coming as a movie soundtrack or whatever only has one subwoofer channel. And when you have more than one subwoofer, then that helps if you position them properly to smooth out the bass response in a room. But they're both getting the same signal. So when you see somebody talk about a 7.2 system, you're talking about the number of subwoofers, not the number of subwoofer channels in the signal. The signal almost universally is going to be one channel of subwoofer, or as it's more often called, LFE, low frequency effects. Then there's, and some of the low frequencies from the main channels are going to get folded or redirected to one or more subwoofers. But again, it's going to be the same signal. And the reason is that bass frequencies are not directional, so you don't need to have them come from this direction or that direction. There are some people who would argue with that and would want subwoofers or full-range speakers that can go down to 20 hertz as a stereo pair, but that's a relatively esoteric application. Generally speaking, all content is something 0.1, and if you have more than one subwoofer, then your system is something 0.2 or 0.3 or 0.4 or whatever. Let's see. That's it.
Thank you, Scotty.
My pleasure. See you next week.
Bye-bye. Na-da-da-dum, dum-dum, da-la-la. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number if you want to call in. Website, techguylabs.com. And on the line right now, Annie in Las Vegas. Hi, Annie. Thank you for hanging on.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So I described your problem as you have a drive, you could see it, but you don't see the stuff that's supposed to be on it. Is that right?
Actually, not quite. I don't see a particular file that should be on it. The file has got files in it, and it's over 4 terabytes. And
okay, so you see other files, but there's a file missing.
Right. It's a big one.
Big in terms of importance or in size or both?
Size.
Okay.
Everything on it is pretty much backed up. There's little stuff that isn't that would be nice to grab, though. But it's also my big RAID drive that I process.
Uh-oh, it's RAID. Is there only one file missing, or are there a lot of files missing?
Well, there's files within that one file. That was the main head file.
Oh, it's a folder.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's a folder, and that whole folder's gone.
Yeah, I can't. And
But other folders that are right next to it, they're still there.
Yeah, they're program files. If I put this, I started this file right on the C drive. I mean, I didn't go through all the Microsoft Word, Windows stuff. I went right to the C drive using Explorer, started this, and it's where I put stuff every time I process some videos. Everything's backed up. But I can't.
And it's not just is the contents of the folder gone, but the folder's still there, or everything's gone?
Everything's gone.
The folder's gone, too. Interesting.
There's another
folder that's showing up fine. It's a small one that just had a few pictures in it. But other than that, everything else looks kind of system-ish. It looks, you know, like the stuff that came on it. But yeah, I can't. I did a backup and tried to look at the backup to see if I could see the folder through that, and I couldn't. So I don't know where it is. If you look at the BIOS, says that the RAID is fine, everything's happy. I did a forced shutdown, and it wanted to fix the RAID after that. Now it thinks it's not a bootable RAID. I don't care about that. If I can get
But that's probably. And is that when that folder disappeared?
Yes.
Okay. So what happens when you have disk errors? They can be cleaned up, and that's what happened. But it may be that the disk error occurred either where the data of the folder was, or more likely where the folder entry in the file allocation table was. And in the process of cleaning it up, some stuff was disappeared. May not be deleted. In fact, chances are most of it's not deleted. But it's just not visible. You understand what you see when you look in Explorer at a drive is a representation of that drive, just like you're looking at a card catalog in a library. Remember those? they don't exist anymore. But that's the idea: is that there's a card catalog, a file allocation table that says this is where this file is. And actually, the reason you need that is because files aren't just lumps on a drive; they're spread out all over. You know, bits of the files are spread out all over. And they link one to another. And so the file allocation table says, well, this file is of this name begins here. If that part is deleted, then the data probably still is on the drive, especially if it's a lot of data, but it's just not visible. So you can look at the drive with tools that will see data, even though the catalog, in other words, don't use the catalog, but look directly at the drive. It's as if you didn't trust your card catalog at a library, so you sent a librarian up into the stacks to look at all the books. Oh, they're still there. Some of them may be missing or damaged, but they may still be there. So there's a number of programs that do that. Do not pay for a program that does that, because that's not, frankly, necessary. I usually recommend a program called Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A. It's from a company called Piriform that's well-known for making CCleaner and a bunch of other very useful PC utilities. This will look through your computer for the traces of files that are no longer in the card catalog. And it seems like this would be a useful thing to do. It will rebuild you can either recover the file one by one, or what you might want to try to do is rebuild the file allocation table. There's usually a second one. Recuva is a nice little program that's free. If you decide you want more professional features, they offer a pro version for $20. It's, you know, but the Recuva free does everything. What you don't want, if you go online and you look for recover deleted files or missing files, there's a lot of programs that are very annoying to me that will look through the drive and say, yeah, I see a bunch of them. That'll be $50, please. And I don't want you to do that. So try Recuva and see if it'll work.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah, we'll put this in the show notes. You don't have to memorize it or write it down.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, because I was going to go look it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I can get to that file back again, because there was stuff. We didn't worry about losing the whole RAID.
It may be damaged, you know. So, for instance, I know this is video, but in a case of it's like an image, like the image may be mostly okay, but a portion of it would be messed up, or some images would be fine, some would be missing. It's not going to get everything back. And this is why before the break I said don't do anything to that drive, because when something's been deleted, it doesn't delete the data. It just releases the space on the drive for others to use, and so it can get overwritten. And also, because this happened, it's very likely that you actually have some bad sectors on the drive, and that's what was going on during the rebuilding. So there's no guarantee, but that's why I don't want you to spend money. Recuva will do it. Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A, will do it very well.
The file, basically, with all the files within it, if you looked at the top folder, was over 5 terabytes.
Yikes!
You couldn't have heard them. Yeah.
Well, and see, so you may be able to recover 99% of it, but because of the nature of the file, it may not be usable because it needs 100% of it. You know, whatever program's reading, if it's a video file, for instance, a slightly damaged video file is as good as a completely deleted video file. So,
yeah, mostly I want to get some of the sidecar files of some of our photography is the only thing I really want.
So the folder was 5 terabytes, but there were smaller files in it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was.
So the smaller files will be okay. And the sidecars, so many of them will be okay. When you do recover them, though, be careful because don't recover them onto the, recover them onto an external disk. But you don't want to recover onto the same disk. You recover onto a new disk.
Yeah, no, I made sure not to record anything to write over anything. The only thing I did to the disk that I worry about was I did try and give it ownership because I thought it.
Sure, that was reasonable. Yeah. Anything you do potentially erases data, so don't do anything more. Install Recova on an external drive, that kind of thing. But Recova, the website explains all of this for you. Now, I'm wondering if it will do everything you want it to do. Now that they're offering a paid version, still it'd be worth $20, right? And it's a good company. But I'm wondering if they've gone the route that everybody else seems to go, which is, hey, we can see those files. They're there. And if you give us money, we'll recover them for you, which would really be annoying. This all started with Norton Unerased way back when. That's how the Norton Utilities started. He wrote an unerasure because most operating systems don't want to take the time to erase a file when you delete it. They merely mark it deleted and say, anybody wants this space, it's fair game. Would take them too long to go through each file and erase it, writing over it. They don't do that. 8888 Ask Leo. The show notes again, techguylabs.com. That's where all sorts of good tidbits, useful tools are. And if you have a recovery tool you really like and you want to give it a plug, go there and leave a comment too. techguylabs.com. More of your calls right after this.
A deep scan should be enabled. The quick scan of recover does never find anything.
Do the deep scan, not the quick scan.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know. And have they always charged does it recover deleted files without the pro version?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Somebody in the chat room is saying, yeah, you'll find the files, but it won't recover them. Yeah. No, that's that good.
I mean, the last time I used it, did.
Yeah, unless they changed their, yeah, okay.
I don't even know why they have
it. Yeah. Because it's probably fine stuff that's in the recycle bin and things like that, right?
It's in the recycle bin.
They mentioned that. Recover recovers files from your Windows computer, recycle bin, digital camera card, or MP3 player. Yeah, well, if you need a program to recover stuff from your recycle bin,
something else is wrong.
Yeah. Tech Guy Show today brought to you by The Tracker. How much time do you spend looking for something you know you have, but you can't find? It's frustrating, isn't it? Number one, of course, keys, wallets, remote controls, pets, luggage. You don't have to worry about it anymore. You got the Tracker. The Tracker is a coin-sized tracking device, weighs next to nothing. It pairs with your phone, and it will tell you where your stuff is so you don't have to look for it. Just go to thetracker.com and take a look at the Tracker. I'll tell you a few things that make the Tracker unique. One, it's got a replaceable battery, which means you can keep it going for years and years and years. It uses Bluetooth LE, so it's very battery-friendly. But when it runs out, you pop in a new, it's one of those quarter-sized drugstore batteries. You pick them up inexpensively. Easy to replace. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. Family sharing, that's new. Means that you can track the same Tracker Bravo from multiple phones. The Tracker Bravo will show a map of where your keys or remote control or luggage or wallet or bicycle was last seen or pet. And this, I love this. They've sold so many of them that they have now a Tracker crowdsourced GPS network. They've sold more than 4.5 million. That's an old number, so I think it's actually more than that. Trackers all over the world. So even if, you see the map, that you left the keys on the beach, but somebody picked them up and brought them somewhere, you'll know where they went because anytime somebody with a tracker on their phone walks by your device, it'll ping you. It'll say, hey, your device was just spotted. You get customizable two-way separation alerts. So if you leave your keys behind, your phone will let you know. If you leave your phone behind, your keys will let you know. It is just awesome. And the distance indicator on the tracker app is great. It's like warm, warm, cold. It'll let you know if you're getting closer to your items. I love that. 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no reason not to give it a try. They've got laser engraving, this new UV LED printing. You can put your puppy on it. There's accessories, including a water-resistant case, which is what I would recommend for pets. And it's just great. Go check it out. The Tracker Bravo Tracker is at thetracker.com, thetracker.com. There's no E at the end there. And here's a special extra thing. If, you know, you load up all your different stuff, get everything you need. If you use the promo code TECHGUY when you check out, they'll throw an extra Tracker Bravo in with your order. Now, that's nice. TheTracker.com. Use the promo code TECHGUY to get an extra Tracker Bravo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Michael Cozio, our musical director, spinning some very fine musical selections. Scott in Los Angeles is next. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I used the free version of Dropbox for a couple of years, and when my computer filled up, I decided to pay them, and it wasn't until I transferred 500 gigabytes of files to their computer that I found out it does not free up my disk space. So now instead of...
Well, it can't. Okay, so let me explain how it could. So the way the theory behind Dropbox and many other systems like Dropbox, Box, you know, O-Drive, iDrive, is it's a synchronization tool. So
yes,
you create a Dropbox folder on your hard drive. It will synchronize that. Then you put Dropbox on another computer. It'll create that same folder and synchronize it. So you'll have copies on your local computer, copies on the Dropbox site, and then if you want another computer, copy there.
Yeah.
Once you do that sync, once you can look at your go to Dropbox.com, look at your account, see the files that you want to preserve there,
yeah,
and verify them, then you could turn off Dropbox syncing on your computer. You want to do that first because you don't want it to sync deletions.
Right.
So turn off syncing. It'll still be on the web. So turn off syncing, look and verify it on the web, and then you can delete it on the computer. Now, you do that at your peril because if Dropbox didn't get every file or some of the files are damaged or whatever, got damaged in transit, that's your only copy. So my suggestion would be to use an external hard drive as well.
Yeah, I think I have to do that.
That way you're sure, you're pretty sure. I mean, there's no guarantee. When you have one copy of anything, whether it's on Dropbox or local, it's only one. It's not backed up, and so it's at risk.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, for some reason, I thought I was, you know.
You thought you were moving it there.
Yeah, I thought I was buying 500 gigabytes, but instead I'm getting
you are
1.5 terabytes. And...
Well, you are. You did buy 500 gigabytes, and it's storing that data there, but it doesn't delete it from your computer unless you go do it intentionally. And for good reason, right? I wouldn't want to use a program that move files off my computer and then delete it, you know, to somewhere else and delete them without my knowledge.
Yeah.
Right? So, and by the way, if you do that, before you turn sync back on, copy those files from Dropbox to another computer or to a drive.
Oh yeah.
Don't because you could actually sync deletions. So, you know, you can also turn that off in Dropbox. Say, don't sync deletions. That's where people often get into trouble with that. Because a sync tool, in theory, is making two folders, whether two different drives, two different computers, cloud and home, the same. And the way you keep them the same is if you delete something on one, it deletes on the other. You don't want that. You want a backup solution, which means don't sync deletions. And I'm pretty sure in Dropbox there's a checkbox to do that. But just to be safe, just turn off synchronization entirely before you do the delivery. All right?
Well, thank you.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call. It's, you know, it's always cheaper and faster to buy an external hard drive. They're cheap now. A terabyte or two easily under $100. Just go down to the big box store, pick up a, you know, Western Digital, makes them a bunch. WD's probably everywhere. What they call My Book or Passport. They have all sorts of names for it. And just drag the stuff off. You want to verify that it got copied. In fact, here's a pro tip. Their Windows copy routine is terrible. It makes mistakes. It's error prone. It gives up. So Microsoft has for years, more than I think 20 years, distributed a hidden version of their copy program called RoboCopy that is slower but more reliable and in fact verifies the copy before it moves on to the next file. And it'll pick up if the copy fails and et cetera, et cetera. So if you get an external drive, you have to go to the command line. That's why this is hidden. There's no icon. You're now doing a little pro tip here. Black Diamond, kids. You're going to go to the command line and type RoboCopy. And you'll, if you type RoboCopy, you'll see all the options. And you can RoboCopy from your C drive to an external drive. And that's a much more reliable way to do it. Much, much slower. You're going to go to bed. There are third-party programs that do similar things as well. Mass, Rochester, New York. Hi, Mass.
Hi, how are you?
Am I saying your name right?
Mass, yes, thank you.
Hello, Mass.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you very much for, you know, the service you're providing over the years. I'm also one of those long-time listeners.
Nice, thank you. Welcome.
I have two issues. Two little problems. One is I'm unable to connect my PC to Wi-Fi. I got Windows 10. And it's a PC that about 3 years old. I haven't used it in a long time, ever since I started using the Chromebooks. And but I need to get in there every once in a while to dig up some old file. So, you know, but when I use it, I need it to be, updated as far as security and alike.
So you didn't change the password or anything?
Well, I actually moved to another place and I had to get essentially another Wi-Fi. I was able to connect this new Wi-Fi to my Chromebook.
So you can connect to it with your Chromebook with that password, but that same password won't work on your Windows machine.
Right, but I must say that there is a possibility that I might have mistyped it on this machine.
Okay, hold on a sec, because I got to take a break, but I'll help you. I'll continue to help you as we go into the break. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls right after this. So, Moss, is this your Wi-Fi, or are you using, like, the apartment building's Wi-Fi?
No, it is my Wi-Fi.
Okay. So, I could tell you how you can reset your Wi-Fi password. Would you like to do that? Then you'd have to go change it everywhere else, or you could change it to what you think it is.
Right. No, I know what it is.
Yeah, but it's not working.
Yeah, well... Here's the issue, Leo. I cannot find the spot where I can retype it on the PC.
Oh.
It used to be easy on the previous versions of Windows. On this one, it's not.
I get it. You just can't. So it's changed, but Windows thinks it's seeing it and can't get into it. And you want to change. Did you use the same SSID? Is that what happened?
You know how you usually, when you make a mistake inputting the password, you can just say forget it and start over.
Right.
In this case, I don't know where to start over. I see my Wi-Fi, and I see it says no internet, comma secured. Then I click on it, and I have the option to disconnect. And I don't know why that is. So when I disconnect, and then all I see is that connect automatically. box that you know that I'm supposed to check, but I don't see where I can re-enter my password. That's the issue.
Yeah. I wish my mouse were working because I could try this. For some reason, I've broken my mouse. Let me reset. I'm pretty sure you could just, you know, I haven't tried this in Windows 10, but is there a forget network? If you right click on the network, is there a forget network?
Okay.
I'm going to have to do it on mine just to see.
Right. Well,
I can't
there's no right option to forget here.
All right. Hold on a second. I'm just rebooting my Windows machine. For some reason, it lost its mouse connectivity. So that was that Samsung T1. And by the way, it's interesting. I'll show you. It doesn't see the... talking to VDOC here. It doesn't see the... it only sees the small partition. All right, so here's the mouse. Here's the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I'm back here. It says special, you know, it says no internet.
Yeah. Yeah. What is going on with my Windows machine? Something weird is happening. Did I turn off Wi-Fi? Maybe I turned off Wi-Fi. All right. Oh, yeah, probably died. Hold on. Well, you're right. This should be so much easier than it is. This is ridiculous. Wi-Fi, show available networks. There's properties. Well, you know what? This is ridiculously hard.
Yeah, that's what
this is ridiculous.
You know, I've been so happy using the Chromebook ever since I got used to it and learned how to use the various, you know.
We don't have Johnny yet, but that's all right. I'll explain it. Hold on a second. Mas, I'll get to you in a sec here. Hold on. Normally, Johnny Jett would be joining us at this time, but he's busy traveling. He's a traveling man. He's in Huntsville, Alabama, at the space camp. I don't know. Is he doing it, or is he just visiting? I'm not sure, but he'll join us tomorrow at this time on the Tech Guy Show, and we'll talk about traveling better. Lots of questions for Johnny Jett I've been getting. Meanwhile, we're talking to Moss. Weird thing, you know, he's hasn't used – is it Windows 10, Moss?
Yes.
He hasn't used Windows in a while. He's been using a Chromebook, and life is so much easier in the Chromebook world. For instance, if you want to change the Wi-Fi password on a Wi-Fi connection, it's a simple thing to do. So,
right.
And I thought it was easy in Windows 10, and I'm looking and looking, and it's not obvious. I don't blame you for being confused. So let's see. I think what you want to do, and part of the reason this is confusing is Windows now has not one but two control panels, always handy. If you right-click on the little Wi-Fi icon in the system tray and open the Network and Sharing Center control panel, let's see. You'll see the Wi-Fi connections. You click on it. One would think if you go to Properties, you could change the password, but no. This is insane. This is insane. You know what? You've been spoiled, as have I guess, because this is obviously a trivial thing to do on any other operating system. Why Windows 10 has decided to make this hard is beyond me. So if I click on the Wi-Fi icon, boy, you know, and if, I haven't done this in so long, doesn't look like you have a choice. Of forgetting it or anything. You can just, that's crazy. Now, the chat room saying use the command line, which, of course, I would use the command line, but that's not going to help you, Moss, and it's certainly not something I want to do on the You shouldn't have to use the command line. I guess that's the bottom line.
So
So I'm looking. Manage hardware properties. All right. You know what? This is crazy. We will find this. Moss, keep listening. Somebody's saying go to settings, network, and internet. I'm there. Wi-Fi, manage known networks. Okay. I don't see manage known networks. Let me see if I can find that. And then this is embarrassing. Manage known networks and select SSID and forget. All right. I'm gonna figure this out. Apparently there is a way. How about this one? Here's maybe something a little simpler. Windows key, Wi-Fi settings, change Wi-Fi settings. Okay. Go to manage. I don't see manage. Manage known networks. Okay. Good, good. I'm getting a list. And then there's a forget button. That was only 5 clicks. Why is that so hard, Moss? It's simple. So you ready? Here we go.
Yeah, what do I do?
Windows key, type Wi-Fi, because you want to get to the change Wi-Fi settings. It's in the system settings.
Wi-Fi.
And that'll pull up in the menu, change Wi-Fi settings. And then you'll see under Wi-Fi, there's a manage known networks entry. And if you go to manage known networks, you get a list of all the networks that you've seen on your Wi-Fi, including the one you're having trouble logging into. You want to change the password of. If you click on it, it'll give you two buttons, properties and forget. If you click forget, it will then the next time you click it, it'll say, what's the password? Because I forgot.
Yeah, but, you know, Leo, go back just a step.
Yeah.
Because when I'm clicking at the command line, the window button.
The hitting Windows button and typing Wi-Fi is just a shortcut for going to the Wi-Fi setup in the control
right.
panel.
And I'm there, and I see my Wi-Fi, and I see one that says best match, and then my Wi-Fi, and then settings. Do I click settings?
No, you're in the wrong spot.
Okay.
So, again, Windows key, type Wi-Fi, W-I-F-I, and you're going to look for an entry that says change Wi-Fi settings. That's the one you want.
I don't get that.
You don't get that one?
Nope. See, maybe that's my problem.
I oughta. Okay, here's another one. Let's try this from Web 795. Go right click on the Wi-Fi icon in the system tray, right? Now he said, or click on it, I guess. Click on it. Okay, click on it. You should see all the Wi-Fis that you can see. If you then, he says, right click on it. Well, see, I can't right click on it, so I don't know why he thinks you can do that. Ah, I see clicking on it gives me a connect, but not a forget. Boy, Microsoft really screwed this one up. Settings, network and internet, Wi-Fi, manage known networks, click your SSID, and there should be a forget button. How many clicks is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 clicks. That's all? That's all? What's interesting is that Moss is seeing a different menu than I am. And part of the problem with that is there's not just one version of Windows 10. And I cannot right click to save my life on that. So I don't know what's that all about. I can disconnect. Will that do it? But he's not connected. You want to forget it. This is the key. You want to forget it. You want to forget that Wi-Fi network, because then what that means is forget all the settings for it. And then the next time you choose it, it will pop up that password once again, Moss, and you'll have a chance to enter it, the new password. If you have forgotten or the password was mistyped, you can reset your Wi-Fi access point, your router, or just log into your Wi-Fi access point from the browser and change it there to something you remember. And yes, of course you can do it in the command line, Baraboo. But I'm not going to read out a command line. We will put it in the show notes, though. We'll paste that in there for those of you who want to do it from the C prompt. It should not be that hard. This is something you do a lot. Nick in San Fernando, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes. Hi, Leo. Longtime listener here.
Thanks, Nick.
Everybody I know of. I'm an antique, and I have a couple of – I have one antique question. Really, you think I'm kidding? I'm sitting here in front of the only working computer left in my office in my house, which is an old netbook running Alta Vista Home Pre.
That is an antique. You're no antique. That's an antique.
Oh, no, no. I'm just starting. I've been at this stuff since I was a computer graphics specialist, catalogs, and did many.
Uh-oh. Hello? Did we lose him? I think the battery died or something went bad. Hello. Well, you know what? I'm going to put Nick on hold, Heather. This is not my day, is it? I'm going to put Nick on hold. You can see if his battery died or if it's something I'm doing. One more time. JC Techie, settings, network and internet, Wi-Fi, manage known networks, forget. That's what I was saying. We were trying to give you the shortcut with a Windows key. He says he doesn't see that in his menu. Crazy. Now we have some sympathy, right, for those poor people we call on the phone, the customer service reps. You call up and say, my Windows isn't working. What fun, huh? 8888-ASK, Leo. We'll see if we can get the antique. See if we can get Nick working again. I'll talk to Heather and see what's going on. He's got Windows Vista on a netbook. Whoa. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, here we go. Let's have some fun, shall we? Here's Windows 10. So. Oh, you know what? I'm on Ethernet, but that's okay. So you do this, press the Windows key, type in Wi-Fi. You want the best match, which is change Wi-Fi settings. Or you could just go to your control panel. I mean, you could do that too. Somewhere in here. Oh, forget it. The problem is there's two control panels, and you this is the one for the simple control panel. It used to be so easy. Actually, this is the complicated control panel now, right? Can I do it from the network? Can I open network and sharing center? Ugh. Internet options? Ugh. God, is that ugly. So this is what I was going to show you, which is quite easy. We see Wi-Fi and then manage known networks. Here's all the networks, and I can click on that, and I can press forget, and it just goes away. And now the next time I choose that, I'll have to type in the password. Click on this, forget. Click on this, forget. Actually, there's quite a bit of stuff I should click on this and forget. Click on this and forget. Click on this and forget. So that's the way to do it. I'm not sure why it wasn't showing up in his why he wasn't seeing change Wi-Fi settings, but that's the way to do it. It's not immediately obvious. Then there's Wi-Fi. Mine's off, but even if it's on, you should see manage known networks. You can hardly see that, I know. I'm sorry. Manage known networks is right there. There's the known networks, and when you click on one, you can forget it. This is the creator's update, yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK Leo. That was a nightmare. Let's go back to Nick. I think we got him now. It must have been something went wrong with our system. Nick, are you still there?
Yes, I certainly am.
All right. Just to recap, Nick's an antique. He has a netbook. It's running Vista.
Well, I'm going to change that. That's what's working. What I did was about a year ago, I decided I wanted to go back to doing some more work in Adobe software, creative stuff. So I got a desktop unit that was running XP. I know, another antique. I got a full brand new version because of fights with Microsoft, a full brand new version of XP that's in a DVD unused, a complete Adobe suite of all of their graphic programs unopened, uninstalled, unused, and I have all that good stuff here. Now my problem comes up. I really want to make that unit work again. The computer should be fine and whatever. I'm just worried about what's going to happen since every single thing I own, which is thousands of dollars worth of software, is, because I bought all of it, is now all antiques. Am I going to have trouble trying to make it work? I don't want to, I'm not using it commercially. I just want to use it for myself.
Here's what's different between digital technology and...
I don't even care if they ever update anything because it will work as is for what I want to do. But am I going to have a problem with all this antique software?
Here's what's different between software and actual antiques. If you go to an antique store and buy a butter churn and put some heavy whipping cream in there and churn it, it'll turn into butter. It'll work still. Digital technology, not so much. So here, yes, it will all work. It will, you know, in fact, it'll work exactly as it did when you first got it. The one catch might be authentication servers, you know, copy protection. It, both Adobe and Microsoft have copy protection where it goes out to what is called an authentication server. And it says, what's your serial number? And you enter your serial number and then it goes, okay, you can use this copy, but don't try to use it anywhere else. Assuming that those authentication servers are working for both your Adobe products and Microsoft Windows, and I think they are, you should have no problem. Here's the only negative, and the reason we tell people not to use XP and now Vista, is all versions of Windows get have a life cycle. There is a point at which they reach end of support, the end of life. They're not going to be supported any further, which means, you know, it will... no longer receive patches and, more importantly to you, security fixes. So if you do not connect that Windows XP computer to the outside world, no problem. It's fine. It'll work exactly as it did back in 2005. And so will the Adobe software and so forth. You'll have to connect it to the internet to authenticate it. After that, you're fine. And periodically, every 30 days or so, you might have to reconnect to the internet. Truthfully, even having it just connected to the internet is probably fine. Make sure you apply all the XP patches that are available. It's just new exploits. And there are new exploits that come along that infect Windows XP. But as long as you don't surf the net, get emailed, you know, you can be connected to the internet. I wouldn't worry about it. Vista and XP are now out of life. They're not going to be updated by Microsoft, even for critical security flaws. And as you know, there are some. I wouldn't worry about it. It's like the butter churn. If the butter churn were connected to the internet, it's not. So it continues to work. I think you're probably all right, in other words. Go ahead and knock yourself out. Have a good time. I wouldn't want to use XP as my main machine at this point. Just too risky to surf around. Don't get email, don't open attachments. Be very careful what you do on that XP machine. Having said that, our good friend Steve Gibson, my security guru, is using XP still. He says he's fine. Thanks very much. He's fine. XP or Windows 10, a lot of people got bit this week. Did you get bit by the Google Docs virus? This is how easy it is. And no antivirus, by the way, would have stopped this because antiviruses can't move fast enough. Many of us on, Wednesday, got an email from someone we know. This is important. I want to underscore that. From someone we work with, someone we know, a friend, someone in our address book, saying, here's a document I want to share with you. We've all gotten that, right? On Google Docs. Click this button. Now, if you click the button and you didn't pay attention, If you pay attention, you will notice that this Google Doc didn't just share a document with you. It actually asked for permission to access your Gmail account and send and receive email on your behalf. Whoops. That might have been a little red flag. It then installed an extension called Google Docs into your browser. Funny thing, there's no Google Docs extension. Your browser knows how to handle Google Docs just fine, thank you. So this was a rogue extension. People who did click allow found that the little extension immediately went to their Gmail, got all the names and addresses of all their contacts, and emailed all of them saying, I've got a document I want to share with you. It came from you. And of course, they like you. They know you. You would never do anything to harm them, so they clicked it. And then it got sent out to everybody they know, and everybody they know, and everybody they know. You could see how quickly this spread across the internet. Probably tens of millions of infections. As soon as Google learned, it did the one thing that anybody could do, which is disabled that extension. It prevented it from working anymore. And if you go into your browser extensions and you see one called Google Docs, you might want to delete that because that's it. If you did get bit by this, you might want to send an... I wouldn't bother. You could send a note to all your friends saying, hey, don't click this link, but it's too late. They either did or didn't. And even if they did today, nothing bad would happen because of Google discontinuing it. So many universities and schools that use Google Docs got hit by this. A great many journalists got hit by it. Tech journalists, I did not, but a great many did because people share documents with us all the time saying, hey, I've got a scoop for you. Can you imagine? I mean, talk about an explosive, geometric growth. It's like that old ad, right? I told a friend, then they told two friends, then they told two friends. Everybody in your contact list got that email. So, how do you prevent against something like that? Well, that's pretty tough, right? You've heard me say don't open attachments from people, but this wasn't an attachment. I have said be very careful about links in email that you click or links in messages, but this was, looked like legitimate in every respect, looked like a legitimate link. It even sent you to Google and asked you to log into your Google account for permission. The way you could have protected yourself is if you read the permissions it was asking for. Which nobody does. But if you read those, and make that a habit, what does this want to do? It's more than just let you read a document. It said, I want access to your Google Mail. That should have been a red flag. But everybody, we all click, 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 click. Nobody pays attention. If your Chrome, plus 4DB in the chat room, says, my Chrome has a Google Docs offline extension. That's not quite the same. It won't say Google Docs offline. It will just say Google Docs. But there is no Google Docs extension. There may be an offline extension. That's something different. But I don't know how you fix it. I mean, I guess be suspicious. Be suspicious. Read carefully before giving people permission. That's a good one. And this wouldn't have been mattered if you're using Windows XP or Windows 10. Bit everybody. And by the way, an antivirus probably wouldn't have stopped it either. And certainly none did because it spread so fast. 8888 Ask Leo. Caleb on the line from East Vail, California. Hi, Caleb. How you doing? Welcome.
Hi, Leo. I guess I'm looking for some guidance.
Okay.
I'm tired of buying laptops. They don't age well, and I like to be able to upgrade and stuff. So I'm looking for a portable desktop solution. And right now, I'm looking at a lot of mini ITX boxes and things because they're getting pretty powerful now.
Yeah, they're really amazing, these little and the NUCs, the NUCs, New Unit of Computing, very small, very powerful.
Yeah. The form factor is great. Yeah, I want to take this with me when I'm a digital
artist.
All right.
Hang on a break for the break here because we got to take a break for news, and I will continue with this call when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, augmented reality. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Mark in Costa Mesa is next. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I felt like I was waiting to talk to Santa Claus.
Hello there, little Mark. What would you like for Christmas?
Well, I would love you to help me with an issue that I'm having with just some advice on podcasting.
If I'm Santa Claus, that makes Heather an elf. Yeah. She does kind of escort you to the booth, right? And says, "Now be nice. Santa will be with you in a few minutes."
That's right. I've been a fan of yours since ZDTV. So,
oh, thank you. 1998. It's going to be the 20th anniversary next year.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's unseemly for a man my age to have a man crush on somebody, but you're my man crush, Leo.
That's okay. I'm told bromances are acceptable these days.
Okay.
So you want to be a podcaster, or are you already a podcaster?
No, in fact, we're hoping to do our first show tomorrow.
Wonderful.
And I've set up all the I'm a professional screenwriter, but I'm also I also design websites. So I was talking to one of my team, and he said we should go with Podomatic. And I'm thinking that WordPress with the plugin or some sort of self-hosted solution is better.
Yeah. So let me explain what you need, and then you maybe it'll make it easier for you to choose. Either of those choices, by the way, is fine. So what is a podcast? A podcast is an audio or video show that you produce in the normal way that you would produce anything, audio and video. You record it. You make a digital file. The file needs to be stored somewhere that's accessible to the outside world, and ideally that doesn't cost you a lot of money in bandwidth. Because what if you get a million listeners on your podcast? That's going to cost you. Every single person who listens is going to cost you a little bit of money, and that can add up. So you need somewhere to store that. Then to make it a podcast, as opposed to just a click and download audio file, you have to create something arcane and odd called a RSS file. RSS stands for Really Simple Syndication. It is a format still widely used, and it is the key to what a podcast is. It creates a file in a markup language called XML that's closely related to HTML. And since you're a web developer, you'll know that. In this XML file, it merely is a structured text file that contains information about the show, the name, the creators, context, you know, a short description, that kind of thing, and the link to where to find it. That's very important. And this RSS feed is important because it's automated. It's updated every time you put a new show in there. You add that to the bottom of the RSS feed, and people can subscribe to an RSS feed, check it periodically every day or so to see if there's a new show, and get it automatically. And that's what made it a podcast, right? I'm making an audio show, but if I make this feed, this RSS feed, somebody can subscribe to the feed in an RSS tool and automatically get the new show when it's available. So what Podomatic does, what the WordPress plugins do, is create that feed based on the post that you make, if you're doing it on WordPress, based on your post. So you create you're using the podcast plugin for WordPress. When you do a new show, you'll write up a post, and the plugin will then take the information it needs from that post and make an RSS feed, which somebody can subscribe to. WordPress and most blogging tools already make RSS feeds. That's just kind of built in.
Mm-hmm.
But the podcast RSS feed is kind of special. And to further complicate matters, when Apple decided to support it in iTunes, they added all these new features that aren't part of the regular RSS specification. So a podcast tool has to be iTunes aware.
Uh-huh.
And then make a feed that works in everything, not just, you know, podcast programs or RSS readers, like, you know, the old Google Reader was an RSS reader. Feedly is an RSS reader. Podcasts work fine with that, but it also has to work with iTunes, and that requires a few extra fields.
Okay.
So so those are the things you're looking for: storage and feed creation. And then it ties in nicely to a website, because anything you know, that you're doing like this, you want to have a website people can go to and find out about it. Our podcast network, twit.tv, that's the website. You go there, you'll see description of the network, but you'll also see a link that says shows, a listing of all the shows, and then you go to individual shows. You can see the episodes, and you can subscribe to them. It shows you; it'll show you how to get the RSS feed, or we make it easy by saying, or if you're using iTunes, click this link. If you're in, and then you, most people nowadays, I'll be honest, iTunes is much less important. Most people, the way it works is they have a podcast application on their phone, whether one provided to them by Apple or Android or a third party like Pocket Casts or Stitcher. There's a whole bunch of them. And then there they can search the directory, find your show if they know where to look for it, and add it and subscribe to it. So you really – the number one job is to get people aware of it. Now, you have to set up this back end, but it's pointless to have a back end if there's nobody who wants to listen to it. So there's a variety of things you have to do, right?
Right. One of the hesitations was the, if all things go well and it's well received and people listen to it, is, you know, would Podomatic be a better choice than a WordPress plugin to give to people who might want to sponsor the show down the road, or would?
Oh well, then now we're getting in a whole new bunch of requirements. If you want to make money on a podcast, that's another kettle of fish.
I
would worry first about making it as big as a large an audience as possible. Until you have tens of thousands of listeners, you're not going to get an advertiser.
Okay, well, that'll take a while.
Yeah, anything less than that, nobody's going to look at you. It's just too much trouble.
Right.
And you're not going to make much money because it's too few listeners. There are plenty of agencies, ad agencies, that buy podcasts, and that's become very easy. You know, we sell our own ads, but we also work with maybe a dozen agencies that do podcast advertising that will contact us and say, we've got, well, as an example, WordPress is a sponsor. So their agency contacted us and said, WordPress wants to buy ads. And so then you go through this whole process. So that's another whole nother dimension.
Right. Yeah,
worry first about building an audience. Do it because you love it. What's it going to be about?
Script writing.
You know what? You should do very well.
Yeah, I've been a professional script writer for 20 years, and I teach script writing. So I'm trying to pass on some of that knowledge, but also just get a promotional, promotional tool.
Well, and that's another thing I would recommend. If you can make money in another way, but use the podcast to promote yourself, that's a much more straightforward thing than trying to sell advertising. Advertising can come. We make quite a lot of money on our advertising, but I've been doing this for a long time, as you know.
Yes.
I would also look at Libsyn, Libsyn.
Okay.
They're another company that does the hosting. Hosting is the toughest one. You know, the nice thing about YouTube is you don't pay anything for it. The bad thing is it's video.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be audio only for a while until we can
get
our act together.
And
as far as bandwidth, I have a reseller account with a hosting company, so I have enough bandwidth and all that.
Okay.
So.
Well, you might be surprised if you take off.
That would be a happy problem to have, Leo.
Yes, I know. Spreaker, Spreaker, is another company that does this, like Libsyn, like Podomatic.
Okay.
You probably should look at all of them. I tell you, it does help to be on one of these platforms. It'll reassure advertisers a little bit. So down the road, it isn't a bad thing to do. But you definitely want that website.
Yeah, it's already up and
good
and ready to go. But the question was, where do we host the shows? Do we host them in both platforms,
no,
or do we just
pick one spot and then your feed will go directly to it? You don't want multiple locations. You just want one.
Okay. All right. Well. Thank you so much.
Hey, good luck. What's the name of it going to be?
Yeah, huh?
What's the name?
It's PlotPoints, PlotPoints.com.
PlotPoints, I like it, PlotPoints.com. Leo Laporte, yeah. The tech guy. I think you'll do quite well, actually. That's a hot area.
I have a lot of credibility because I've been, tramping the halls of Hollywood for so many years.
Huge.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I love doing it. I'm not actually, to tell you the truth, I'm not actually out to make money. I don't give a crap about that. I teach not
that
to
makes
make
it much easier. That solves
no expectations, right?
That solves a lot of problems.
Yeah, so a couple of my students approached me about it, and I thought it was a great idea, and they're my production staff. There's two of them. One's a techie guy. He's got the equipment. The other one's got some good generalized knowledge, and then I've got the other stuff, which is, you know, how do you write a script? What do you do? What's Hollywood like? That kind of stuff. So,
you know, get a good host to work with you. It's very hard to do a show by yourself.
Right.
It's much easier if you've got somebody who isn't an expert in the field, but knows how to do a hosting, which is what I do, right? And then interviews you or talks to you or has a conversation with you.
Yeah, my original idea. Well, first of all, one of the students is going to be my co-host, and she's a very lovely lady, and she knows a lot about movies and animation and stuff.
Perfect.
But
part of your audience, by the way, is not necessarily people. Well, almost everybody has a script in them, right? So, mm-hmm. but also movie fans are fascinated by the whole process.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I'm hoping for is, you know, again, we're going to do it on the cheap, on the fly, see how it goes. You know, for right now, it's not going to be live. We're going to do dead radio instead of live radio. And so we're going to post it after the fact.
We don't really know what we're doing.
We're flying blind.
Yeah, I didn't do live at first either. The live really is hard.
Yeah, you do it well. You do it. Well, I mean, you're effortless.
That's my broadcast background. I've been doing live radio for 40 years, so
right.
I prefer.
That's the other thing I'm missing is that great.
Oh, you sound fine. You know what? If you sounded too good, nobody would believe you were a screenwriter. Right?
Probably.
You sound like a human. That's the beauty of podcasting. It's not, and your voice isn't annoying. It's bad if your voice, nobody would want me in. But you don't. You sound fine. You sound like a normal human with a pleasant voice, and that's all you want. You don't want an announcer voice.
No, I do want an announcer voice. One of these days,
that's all right. I want to be a screenwriter, so there.
Well, you know what? You're just a great resource. I love hearing you. I've been in tech for a long time, and it's a lot of fun. My passion is writing, but my secondary passion is tech. So
you know, it's funny because
I
hear from a lot of names in Hollywood all the time because many, you know, especially movie actors have lots of downtime. And so a lot of them are gadget freaks, you know, they've got some discretionary income. They've got a lot of free time.
Yeah. 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 Well, I definitely am. I love the virtual world and I love the digital world and computers too. I
yeah,
enjoy putting the hardware and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
It's fascinating.
That's why I really enjoyed seeing ZDTV when it came out. Yep. It was like a dream come true. A whole channel dedicated to tech.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was just talking to somebody about that. You know, at the time, it was still new enough that we were validating to people. People, you know, said, "Oh, something for me."
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now everybody, you know, it's less meaningful. So I'm still coasting on the goodwill I earned 20 years ago.
Oh, come on, Leo. You earn goodwill every day. You're a great guy.
You.
I appreciate all your time and your good spirits.
Thank you so much, Mark. Good luck.
All right. Thank you very much.
Right.
I hope to call you again sometime in the future.
Yeah. Tell me, you call me and say, all right, I'm ready to sell ads. We got 100,000 listeners. What do I do next?
Okay. I'll contact you at the point of never.
I look forward to that. Take care, Mark.
Take care. Bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's cool. I was just looking at Mark's show, the Plot Points Podcast. Plot Points Podcast. That's cool. Plotpoints.com. Podcasting is interesting because it's very easy to do. It's been around since 2004. That's when I started my first podcast, and when podcasts really started coming out in the late, fall of 2004. So it's 13 years. And they kind of operated under the radar for a while. And then there were some very well-known podcasts from National Public Radio folks. And, a couple of years ago, all the newspapers started writing articles about podcasts like they just discovered them. Or if they didn't just discover them, they'd call it a renaissance. And it was a little hurtful to people like me who've been doing them for 12 years. Renaissance, really? Okay, well, I'm glad we're back. I never really went anywhere. Caleb in Eastvale, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Caleb.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I had a question about...
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yes. Oh, I apologize. I had to put you on hold, and I forgot. You're very patient.
You're fine.
Darn it. I didn't hang up. No.
I'm just glad.
We were talking about, last I remember, we were talking about little form factor computers. These.
Mini ICX. That's sort of what I've been looking around for, stuff that's portable I can take with me. I'm a 3D artist and... I guess digital artist.
So what do you work in? You work in 3D Studio Max or?
With Maya.
Maya. So Maya is a pretty heavy-duty program.
Yes.
You need some horsepower.
Yes.
In general, these mini ITX and NUX are using motherboard graphics, the graphics the Intel chip comes with, as opposed to discrete graphics from an NVIDIA or an AMD, you know, external Radeon card. That may be enough for Maya. I don't know. Worst case, it's going to be slow.
Pretty hard.
Yeah.
I started to see some NVIDIA GTX 1060, 1070 cards and some of these
Mini ITX. Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. And in my searching, I was looking for like maybe a battery or some way to do this, and I found a company called Zotac.
Oh, you don't want to be plugged in.
That's the other thing. I can maybe live with not being plugged in, but I'd like the ability to, you know, unplug, move around, maybe have an hour or two of battery. And Zotac.
So in effect, you want a laptop.
Yes, but my laptops, I work my machines really hard, and they always die. And I just want a desktop that I can sort of upgrade at a later point in time, and I can. If something fries, I can yank a card out. I can replace it and just keep going. There's a company that makes a VR backpack called Zotac VR Go.
Yeah, the idea is that Oculus Rift and you know, many of these require full-blown PCs, so they put a PC on your back, not a laptop, a PC on your back and a battery to go with it.
Yes, and I mean, it's like $2,000, but I was hoping, well, maybe...
Where are you going to be working? Are you going to go to a coffee shop? Where are you going to be doing this?
No.
Are you going out in a meadow, a grassy meadow?
I'm all over the place.
You're going to a cemetery? I mean, I would just say stick with places you can plug in, son.
And that's the thing. If there's no portable thing...
Well, it's portable, but understand that you need a lot of amperage. You know, you need like 100 watts to drive one of these things. And it's going to be – the battery to do that is going to be, you know, fairly hefty. But, I mean, let's face it. You can get a gaming laptop that has all the horsepower you're talking about, and those run for an hour or two maybe. But the more runtime you want, the heavier that thing's going to be. And you know, but if you don't mind putting it in a backpack and carrying it around, you could do it.
Yeah, I guess that was my thing. I didn't find any other solution. I found Universal Power Supplies that would give you like 5-10 minutes if it was more like power failure.
Yeah, those are uninterruptible power supplies, and that's exactly their intent. And those things, I mean, if you wanted more than 15 minutes, you're talking 50 pounds. Those things are hefty because they got big old transformers in them. And so there's an Indiegogo, Murray on Travel in our chat room tells me, called River that is 116,000 milliamp hours. And it has an inverter, which is what you need as well. The inverter takes the DC from the battery and turns it into an AC plug that you can plug your mini ITX PC into.
Okay.
Now, I wonder how heavy that thing is.
I'm a strong guy. Strap it up.
You'll get even stronger. Now, what's nice is they have solar on this as well. So then you can use it. Now, unless they've got – boy, it does look kind of heavy – it's about the size of a human head. 412 watt hours, which is pretty significant. Total output 500 watts. You could run a desktop PC off this thing. Wow, they're selling it. It's only $500.
Okay.
That looks pretty good. They raised $500,000. They were trying to get 30,000, So they did all right. There's obviously you're not the only one who wants to do this. Now, to do solar with this, you'd have to have a larger solar array than would, you know, you'd have to have a separate solar array. But you can can buy folding. So, oh, yeah, for another $200, they sell a solar charger. You could buy one that you'd unfold. Then you could sit out in your meadow. It wouldn't keep up, but, you know, you could take a nap and then go back to work. Go ahead.
I may be going back to for a master's degree, so I was thinking of lugging. Can I take this to class? And
this looks perfect. I'll be honest with you. This looks awesome, and they are in production. You can get it now. Wow, it's called River, your mobile power station and solar generator. It's not
great.
Small. Like I said, it's about the size of a human head.
Oh, that's smaller than some of the stuff I was looking at.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if they say the weight anywhere. This thing. Or you could just buy a Tesla. Often I think of the Tesla as being just a giant rolling iPhone charger. This is pretty impressive that they were able to make this. I'm still looking for the weight. They're not spending a lot of time talking about this. I'm going to guess it's 20 pounds, but
sure.
Yeah. But that's not undoable.
No, yeah, I could throw it in a backpack.
Comes with
another concern.
Go ahead.
If I'm moving this thing around a lot, am I going to be in danger of damaging
you're going to get a case for your PC.
Yes.
That'll protect it a little bit, and you could get, you know, a hard shell case. The biggest challenge is going to be the monitor.
I'm thinking of I have like a Cintiq, one of the smaller ones.
So get it. Yeah, get one of those hard shell cases photographers use that's big enough to have foam insert for the PC and your Cintiq. It's only 11 pounds. Heck, get two. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow. I'm liking this. Now I want one of these. I could do the show from the meadow. I like this. That's really amazing. So $749, they're selling it plus a 50-watt solar charger. My experience with these kind of portable solar chargers is they, you know, they don't charge very fast. But
sure, yeah, I don't even need the solar charger. It'd just be like extra on top.
You can figure out from the watt hours. You need to figure out what the draw is of the various devices. You know, the computer, the mouse, the monitor. And you could figure out how many hours you'd get out of this. You'd probably get 4 or 5 hours, at least.
That would be more than enough. You know, most.
Are you going on movie sets? Working. Where are you going with this?
I work at home. I teach 3D animation at Cal State Northridge. I'm probably going to have to go back to school for a master's degree, so I'll be lugging it around there. I just got accepted to USC for their interactive media.
Wow, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm super amped, but now I'm like, oh, I need a computer again because my laptop is just...
I think pairing this with a mini ITX, that's kind of an interesting idea. And, yeah, you can get NVIDIA cards for those. But I think that's a very interesting idea. Yeah.
I even saw one case, but they're also that where it has a handle on top, so you can just carry it around like a briefcase. But they're sold out everywhere, so I'm going to have to keep looking
for... This has a handle. Go look at this. This has a handle. It's beautiful.
Oh, the river thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I got to go look it up.
It's awesome.
It sounds fantastic.
It's like a little mini vacuum cleaner or something, you know, that you carry around. I think this would be perfect. And this, what I'm curious, this solar panel probably take all night to charge, and unfortunately you need the sun, so take all day to charge.
Right.
Yeah. This is good. Somebody else is saying you could bring a Honda 1200 gas generator. I like it.
Class or work with me. Just kind of
you go down to the pier. Oh, Caleb's here. Yeah, they'd know you were around. How funny. Well, have a great time. It's nice to meet you, Caleb, and congratulations. USC, that's a big deal.
Oh, Oh, thank you very much.
That's exciting.
Thanks for taking my call, too.
My pleasure.
Great information.
Great to talk to you. Take care. If you get it, let me know. Give us a review. I'd love to hear how the river... Good find there. Thank you.
Whoever that was in the chat room.
Oh, yeah. Goal Zero does a lot of solar stuff. Yeah. Yeah, the Microsoft games. This is for on-the-road gaming. Personal gaming environment. Comes with an, it's for an Xbox. I'm not a dork. I'm not a dork. It's also 11 pounds, but how many watts? Oh, it comes with a monitor too. Microsoft GAMES. GAEMS. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chat room's loaded with marine batteries and all sorts of ideas for our portable 3D artist. So there's ways to do this. Microsoft makes a thing called the Games, GAEMS, where they sell it. I don't know if they make it. Vanguard Personal Gaming Environment. It has an Xbox, a monitor in it, and a battery that'll keep you going about 10 hours playing Xbox games. $349. That ain't bad for the gamer on the go. 11 and a half pounds, including, the the 19-inch display and the game controllers. That's amazing. Oh, GAEMS. Who'd have thunk it? Back to the phones we go, and Robert is at University City in California. Hello,
Robert.
Thank you
for taking my call.
My pleasure.
And thank you and your staff for your counsel. And my question, I'm interested in purchasing a portable computer, but it's more than just a laptop. I want it to run Linux, but that's not the issue. The issue is I want a well-built portable computer that has a great large display screen.
How large is large for you?
15 to 17 inches.
Okay, 17. There are still a few manufacturers that make 17, but most of them top out at 15.
15 sounds great then.
Yeah, yeah.
Also a great, well-engineered keyboard. Upgradable, if possible, like the old, if you remember, the Mac Pro steel tower, was...
Yeah, but that wasn't a laptop. You want a laptop or desktop?
I guess I would want a luggable, if you know
what I mean. No. Yeah, you're kind of like Caleb. I mean, that's kind of what Caleb's talking about. These mini ATX cases are about the size of a shoebox, maybe a little smaller, and... They're luggable. They're, 10 pounds. If you're talking a laptop, there are plenty of good laptop choices that aren't quite so heavy. I would look at Lenovo and their X1, either the X1 Yoga or the X1 Carbon. Excellent keyboards. Lenovo's famous for those. They have a couple of models with OLED screens, which is good as you can get. That's as good, those are remarkable. I think they top out at 14 and a half inches. I don't think they get as big as 17, but the ThinkPad P51 has a 15-inch screen as well. So I think any of those laptops are probably that in that form factor, you're going to have a lot of choice. But if you're talking about like you want an Osborne or a K Pro, I don't know.
Yeah, you remember the old?
Oh yeah, the compact. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody, that's an interesting question. Does anybody make luggables anymore? I don't know.
Now, yeah, a luggable or a suitcase computer.
One of the reasons
very
I mentioned,
well made.
One of the reasons I mentioned Lenovo is because they're famous for being very Linux friendly. My friend Cory Doctorow, who's a science fiction author and an activist, internet activist, lives exclusively on Lenovo laptops. He buys himself one new one a year, and one of the reasons he likes them is they have in-home service as part of the deal. So, and he puts Linux on it. He does not use Windows. He's a Linux guy. Dell is also very famous for supporting Linux quite well. And there are some integrators. I have a 17-inch laptop running Ubuntu from a company called System 76 in Colorado. I love. And that is a beast. That thing has NVIDIA graphics. It comes with Linux pre-installed. Beautiful 17-inch screen. No touch. But Linux, you know, isn't really touch-friendly particularly, so I don't think that's a problem. But luggable, boy, I don't know. Is anybody? Let's ask the chat room. Anybody still make luggables?
Now, you mentioned System 76.
Yeah, they're a company. I bought. I actually have their 17-inch. They're one of the last companies still making 17-inch laptops. System76.com. Very good. And that's if you're going Linux, that's their specialty.
Fabulous. That is fabulous, and price is no object. I'm willing to invest.
Well, you will pay. You will pay because it's. But I tell you, there I have their Oryx Oryx. That's the one that comes in 17 inch, and that thing's a beast. It is. You know, it's fair to call it a luggable, even though it's in a laptop form factor. It is a beast.
Oryx Oryx.
Yeah, from System 76. Yeah, I like them a lot. I've been very happy with their customer service because they. Are an Ubuntu integrator. They work closely with Ubuntu upstreaming patches and fixes. And if you, all the drivers, everything works perfectly because that's what they do. They are reselling, as most Linux integrators are, laptops made by other companies. In this case, I'm told by the chat room, a company called Clevo, C-L-E-V-O, or Clevo. And so the Oryx is a Clevo, which is branded. A number of companies sell these. You could probably find the exact same laptop somewhere else. The reason I like System 76, though, is they really put the work into making a good Ubuntu laptop. They are, I think they'll be one of the first Linux integrators to start designing their own laptops. You have to get to a certain size before it makes any economic sense to do your own laptop design. And they've announced that coming this summer, they're going to release their first internally designed laptop, which will be very interesting to see. So apparently there are still luggables. What do we call them? Transportables, I guess, is the modern word. There is apparently a Dell 20-pound laptop desktop hybrid. This came out 10 years ago. I don't know if they're still making that. So the XPS M2010 came out in 2010, so maybe that's not the one for you. Now, if you got a Humvee, just mount it in there. Wow. We have an Osborne in the basement. Oh, we don't have a basement anymore, so I guess the Osborne's gone too. It was so old that all the rubber on the hinges and the mounting was all decaying. It was really an antique. Daryl on the line from Queens. Hi, Daryl.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. I've listened to you for 20-some-odd years from your Call for Help days.
Oh, bless you, Daryl. Thank you.
And I need some help with my personal confuser, as it were.
You remember. You remember. And you remember the other line, it's not your fault.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I have my wife bought me a Lenovo IdeaPad.
Very nice.
About 2 years ago.
It feels like 200, probably. 2 years in laptop. Yeah, it's about 200.
Right. So they give you that recovery partition key, you know, that other kind of stuff. But I'm kind of old school. I want to see if there's a way at least to copy the drive so if something happens to it.
Good idea.
Install everything. But they don't give you no disk anymore.
No, they don't. Usually, and I'm pretty sure Lenovo does this, usually they'll give you a program that will make recovery disks. That's the new way of doing things. So check and see if there is a recovery disk creation tool. I don't remember what Lenovo calls that. But that will make...
It's here.
What you'd like to do, any modern computer, you'd like to put it on a USB key. That would be the best way to do it. Not burn CDs or DVDs, but put it on a USB key. Because then you can boot up and install it. It's faster, more compact. But if you can't do that, there are a lot of programs that will do this. They're called disk imaging programs. And, you know, there's a Cronus True Image, and there's Disk Image, and there's a million of these. Drivesnapshot.de, that was one I used for a long time. And all of these will do something similar. They'll take the contents of your drive and make a bootable drive that you can then use to restore it. I'll put a list in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, actually, good point. I've tried it. I have never tried restoring Microsoft Now, if you have Windows 10, which you should have with that IdeaPad, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. There's a Microsoft imaging program.
Yeah,
hit Windows key and type backup, and you'll see it's an old program, but they still provide it, and it will make an image backup onto another drive of your computer.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, something like that. It's in the control panel. Just do look for backup in the control panel.
Okay.
And then there are a lot of EaseUS makes a drive recovery and an imager. My favorite is an old one from Germany, Drive Snapshot. It's at drivesnapshot.de. The nice thing about that is it'll do it while Windows is running. But it's not free. It's not expensive. It's $30 or $40.
I don't care about money.
It's okay. Worth having this because you're absolutely right. You need that. Need that. Okay?
A friend of mine was telling me about this product called AOME Backupper.
I never heard of AOME. AOM. Huh.
MEI, I'm sorry. Backupper.
Yeah, I don't know that. Anything that will make a disk image is not a hard thing to do.
Disk image, okay. Oh, that's what it is.
Anything that will do that will work for you.
Okay, thank you, sir. You have a good day.
You too. Great to talk to you, Daryl. Take care. Bye-bye. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how are you, pal?
I'm Fab-boo.
Fab-boo. Whoa. Fab-boo. Oh. Nice.
Fabuloso. How are you?
I'm good. If a show called Show That Goes Wrong ever comes to San Francisco with the original cast, you have
go
to see it.
The Show That Goes Wrong.
Yeah, it's like it's an English production.
We're going to see Something Rotten this fall. It's part of the Shorenstein Niederlander Best of Broadway.
Oh, okay.
Some good stuff.
I can't talk. I have a laptop in my mouth. Oh, there I am.
Oh, my gosh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Axel Foley's theme. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Harold Faltermeyer. Haven't heard that in ages. I tell you, Mike Cozio, he is a young guy, but he's got his roots run deep. Meanwhile, two old guys here talking tech. Leo Laporte and Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine.
Whose roots are coming out.
I dyed my roots this week. Dickie D is at Mad Magazine, but he's also, which of course he's one famous for that, but he's also a gadget fanatic and brings us great gizmos and gadgets every week. That's why we call him the Gizwiz. Hi, Dickie.
Wow.
D. Yay.
Well,
wow.
Well,
you act like I haven't ever called you that before. I called you that for years.
A month ago or 2 months ago, I did a thing about a white noise machine from Electrofan. It was their international version.
Yeah.
And the company said, well, wait a minute. We're going to send you something that is called the Electrofan Micro.
Ooh.
Which they did. So, Leo, this thing is really neat. It is so tiny. It has great fidelity for its size.
It sounds like you're in a wind tunnel.
Oh, well, this you know, it's 9 white noise sounds and 1 ocean. So I listened all day, and I know it's not the Pacific, and it's not the Atlantic, because I went down there on my boat, and I compared them. I believe it is the generic.
That's just south of the Pacific, I believe.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, Leo, listen to this.
It a fan or just making a white noise generator?
It's a white noise generator.
It's not blowing air.
No. Just a white noise generator. But unlike the big guy that has international plugs, this one has a built-in battery. So it will make white noise for up to 16 hours. Oh. But wait, there's more.
Oh, how I know.
It's Bluetooth enabled.
What?
So that when you get to your hotel and you want to watch movies or listen to music on a a very decent speaker for a little guy that's 2 inches by an inch and a half. You can stream your music through this guy. And there's still more.
There's more.
The little speaker spins and pops up so you can aim it toward where you are sleeping in bed.
I should get this for the cruise because that ocean noise really can keep me up at night. So I'll just close the windows and have simulated ocean noise.
There you go. There you go. or one of nine fan noises.
Play it again. Let me hear it. Yeah, put it up to the microphone.
Okay, I'm going to hold it up to the mic. All right, so this is the ocean noise, okay? But now, these are different white noises.
Sounds like I'm in an 18-wheeler heading across the country.
You can pick whatever you want.
Sounds like the maid service has started.
Yes. All right, can you move your feet? Can you move your feet? We want to dust in here. This one, it sounds like an air conditioner.
Some people sleep better if they have something going like that.
Right? Me too. I sleep with the big guy, which makes similar noises. And this guy is under $35.
I like it that it's also a Bluetooth speaker, so I could listen to an audiobook.
Yeah, that is really good. Yeah. That is, yeah. And the speaker sound is excellent. $34.95. Electrofan Micro.
It's on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. It comes in black or white.
Or go to soundofsleep.com.
Exactly. Or gizwiz.biz and tech.
Actually, let's give you a plug. Forget Sound of Sleep. By the way, that's a good name, Sound of Sleep.
Sound of, yeah.
Yeah, that's what our audience sounds like much of
the
time.
Well, listen to my podcast. That can do it, too.
So,
have listened.
Yes, gizwiz.tv for the podcast, gizwiz.biz for the website. And while you're there, play the brand new What the Heck Is It contest. All right, you got to tell me, what was that thing? It looked like a baseball with bites taken out of it. What was that?
Leo, only one person got it. It's a pencil sharpener.
Oh.
So I, of course, had to shoot the back of it because the front of it has the name of the company on it and also the little insert. Well, that's going to be the next month.
Oh, see, if you'd shown the hole, I would have known.
Yeah, well, then I would have had 10,000 right answers.
So,
and what fun is that?
Did somebody get it right? RuPaul got it right?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Exactly. Wow. And then, of course, you know, we gave 27, I think, mads for funny answers.
Those little bites are just grips.
They are grips, but people had great ideas. Looks like a speaker you put on a conference room table.
Yeah.
Someone said it was a mouse operated by three people. Someone said it was
three persons. I like that.
It was a ball until his pit bull got a hold of it and chewed off the corners. People are very clever with the answers.
So this is the new one here. If you go to gizwiz.biz and click the What the Heck Is It link, there's a – well, I know exactly what that is, but I'm not gonna say because it's clearly what we use with a Play-Doh to make a plate of sweet potatoes with Play-Doh. It's a Play-Doh sweet potato extruder.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah,
I don't know what the dot in the middle does, but there you go. So
the cherry.
It's a cherry. There's a cherry with every sweet potato. The deal here is you go to the website, you guess what it is. You could win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, autographed by this guy right here, Dick D. Bartolo. Gizwiz, GIZWIZ.BIZ. Also information there about the fan and all the other crazy gadgets he mentions on this show and all the other shows. Did you see that our... So Dick was the gadget guy for Regis and Kathy Lee.
Yes.
And then when Kathy Lee left, became live with Regis and Kelly, and I did it for 10 years.
Yes,
he did. And then, I was there when Regis announced his retirement. That was the last time I did it. And then
I think you were the reason he announced it.
Yeah, he and I left at the same time. Michael Strahan took over. And then Michael left abruptly, much to Kelly's dismay. But our friend Lance Ulanoff has been doing gadgets over there for him, which is great. And they've been in a host search for a year?
Yes, a long time.
They finally found somebody. Ryan Seacrest. Is that amazing?
Yeah. I wonder how they found his name.
I've heard of him. He used to work on CNET,
yes.
I think. But
I think what happened was he never left the ABC studio after New Year's Eve.
I heard he was bunking there. Yeah.
Yep. And then they figured, you know that guy? He, what are you hanging out? He said, well, I'm waiting for 2018 New Year's Eve. And they said...
So should we... Yeah. Should let's you and I write to them and say if we can come on now that it's Kelly and Ryan.
Yeah, why not?
We could do it, you know, a 1-2 punch.
Oh, great. We, you know what? I don't know if we'd work well together.
You know, he's 5'8", she's 5'6". We would look... It'd be Land of the Giants if we were on that show. It'd be great. It'd be great. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy.
All right.
I'll see you next week.
See you soon. Thank you to Heather Hammond, the Phone Ranger. She's been doing great work here preparing people for their appearances. We'll see you. We'll see you next week. Thank you to Michael. She's going, call me. Doesn't work on the radio. Call me. Thanks to Michael Cozio, too, our musical director, spinning the discs. Thanks to you, most importantly, for joining us. Remember, everything we talk about is online, and it goes on all week long because we have a very active bunch of commenters, and we appreciate that, at techguylabs.com. No charge. No charge. It's wide open. Techguylabs.com, and I'll be back here next time, and I hope you will, too. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.